हरिः ॐ सहनौ भवतु सहनौ भुनक्थु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Okay, so Paramatmasandarbha, Adhyayana 4, Adhikarana 3, Bhagavan is the highest aspect of the Absolute Truth. Page 60. Though creation and destruction of the universe takes place from amshas of Bhagavan, from the Purusha forms, Paramatma, endowed with the Shakti called Prakriti, which is the material cause, Upadana. Ultimately, Bhagavan is the cause of the universe. Similarly, if something is created in one place within the ocean, it is created within the whole ocean. Right? Because Bhagavan being everything, because it's generally taken that the impersonal is everything. No, Bhagavan is everything. And one of the features of his everything is the Brahman aspect. And then how he pervades everything and controls everything, that's his Paramatma aspect. But the point is, it's the person who is pervading everything. So that's why it says, something is created in one place within the ocean, is created within the whole ocean. It's not just it's in that part, so it's not in the ocean. No, it's in the whole ocean. But, you know, it's, yeah, just like in the modern context, there's a bunch of garbage floating around down in the, you know, the, let's say, the Indian Ocean, you know, kind of far down south like that. And so it will be said the ocean is polluted, even though it's in one place. Right? So the point is that it's he is endowed with the Shakti, but all this Shakti is coming from Krishna. And then he expands to take care of it. So it's just himself expanding his energies, himself expanding himself, taking care of those energies. Right? So, you know, it's just like, let's say, you're sitting in one place and, you know, things are going very pleasantly, but there's something to do, right? If you could expand yourself, then you'd expand yourself. You continue doing what you're doing and you take care of it. It's you doing it. But that's not the most important thing. That's not the primary aspect. These are secondary aspects. But you see is then, yeah. So Krishna's desire that the material world's creation is there for the reformation of the jivas so they can come back to serving Krishna, right? So that aspect is Bhagavan's feature, not someone else's feature. So that's the principle that's there, is that Prakriti is the material cause. The Purusha is the foundational cause. Time, the indirect cause, is the agitator of Prakriti. I am all three. Srimad Bhagavatam, Srimad 11:24-19. Right. So Krishna is all three because he comes as the Purusha. It's his energy and it's his time. Janmad yasya yataha also indicates that the Lord has a form. He must have a form since he is the source of unlimited Shaktis, which are the source of the Shakti possessing form, which produces the universe possessing form, since he is accepted as the final cause. Though the Lord has a form, this does not mean that he is born from someone else, since it is accepted that there is one final cause. It means you're going to have a final cause. It means everything is coming from somewhere. There has to be a final cause. Because you can say, no, but where does he come from? So it's not logical. No, it's not logical that you say that there must be, every cause has a cause and it just goes on unlimitedly. That's called a logical, what do you call it? It's fallacious logic. It's wrong logic. But it's the logic that's wrong, not the position of the Lord being the original source. Right? Because we say everything in the material platform, it has its source. And that is true. We never see anything that just appears on its own without having some connection with something else. Right? And that all goes back to the material energy. So then they'll say the material energy is the cause. Now, that's the fun part is the scientists, the atheists, the fun to say is that life comes from matter. And they won't ask, where does matter come from? Never. Matter is energy. Where is the energetic? They never ask. But if you say there's an energetic, oh, where did he come from? Oh, where did the material energy come from? So the point is to get rid of the idea of this Purusha, because if there's no Purusha, then there's no laws. There's no laws, then you can act sinfully and it's not a problem. Right? If I decide that sinful action is good, I can do that because there's no standard. Right? But if there's God, then he decides what's sinful and pious, not myself. So that's why you see those on the platform of Anamoya and Pranamoya always want to get rid of God. The higher end of Pranamoya, they can have an imagined God, like you just say, oh, there must be God, there must be some force, there must be some feeling, something pervading, and like that. And that much, and so because of that, they think there's a higher aspect, there's something more, somebody watching, somebody seeing, so they'll tend to be more moral. Right? You know, so that aspect then is appropriate. Right? But you see is that it's still, then we're doing our things because God's watching. What we establish as morality, we have to follow that because God's watching. Does that make sense? So you can have some form of appreciation of the Supreme, but it's just an aspect of your morality. I have morality. And if God is there, then he's watching to see if we're moral or not. You understand? He's a good person, right? He follows all the rules. He, you know, he takes care of his mother. He does all these things. So he's a nice guy. But where does that morality come from? It comes from the social view. What they consider popular, that's what's okay. Right. So, but then someone who actually believes that, no, there's actually is God. It's not just that there is a person, because the other one is there and you have this, that, and there's some faith and like this, but it's not necessarily that it's that there is a person and they are in control. But it's still the same principle is that, okay, God's there, his control, he has his laws. So morality means following the laws of God. Right? On the Anamoya platform, there is no morality because it's just about themselves. So they simply follow whatever works for themselves. So then morality, then that comes and means you're giving benefit to someone else. So then at Pranamoya, morality comes in where you're acting according to the social laws, socially accepted laws that are going to benefit everybody. Right? Does that make sense? So you're going to see is that at the platform of Anamoya, they're going to accept that there is, at the platform of Anamoya, they're going to, it means that you're going to have your three levels of Anamoya, basically. You're going to have the animals, the uncivilized, you know, or unsophisticated or simple, like forest people and that. Then you're going to have the sophisticated, who they develop science and arts. But the development of those science and arts and their involvement is just for their own benefit, right? So within that, that others are doing stuff, you know, that they'll be respectful. They won't. They're not gross. They're not like animals, you know, gross animals. So that they'll respect and they'll deal, but it's only because they get a benefit. They're only following those laws because of the benefit they get, right? So for them, it's only about science and arts. That's all. Then at pranamoy, then you introduce morality. Because morality means now you're working for others' benefits. I'm following all these things because it's better for all the people. You know, that's the whole point. So then that point, so whether there's, you know, so basically speaking that you have all that nice thing like that, and then you see that there are these general kind of societies, you know, the Buddhist culture is like that, you know, sometimes these old pagan cultures, you know, they'll have that kind of a thing. And, you know, it's just like that, you hippies, you know, they'll have this aspect of, yeah, it's just there, this life, this, you know, and so how they focus on that is they're just a general life or a specific life. Like you have the person, it's about everybody and everything and all that. So that's coming from the Saurya thing. Then you're going to have those that, no, it's Ganapati, it's about a certain group, right? Does that make sense? You know, like in the modern, you have all these political platforms that this group is important, that group is important, and this group is nonsense, and that's Ganapati, right? And so like that, you're going to get these aspects. Then you're going to go up. That someone except, you know, that supreme is there, and by that, but it's imagined because it's just a feeling, it's something in the mind. It's not based on Shastra. Right, so only when you go to based on Shastra that there is God as a person. He's it's his laws. At that point, that's the difference, is that now you're following the laws of God rather than there's a feeling about God, and so therefore I will be a nicer person. You understand that difference? Right? Yeah. So now it's God's laws. Now you're following that. Now morality means following the laws of God. And by doing that, the society benefits. That's a secondary aspect, right? I'm serving God. I'm serving the laws of God. You know, it's not necessarily out of devotion to God. It's just that he's God and I'm not. And so he makes the laws and so I follow, right? But it's still, we can see on all these, it's still materialistic because the first one, he's directly doing things for himself, right? The secondary level, I mean, the second level, they're doing things for themselves, but they're willing to kind of include others that they also get better. The third level is now they'll include God, so naturally they include others and they will get benefit, right? And so they accept that God's there, but he's still just an extension of their moral platform, right? It's devotion to God. They may do things in a devoted way. They do their worship. They do the things. They read the scriptures. They follow the rules and regulations and all that. But it's not about pleasing God as a person. It means he is a person. It's about pleasing him as the office of God. You know, like we say, you go to some government authority to get an approval on something. You're pleasing him as the government official. Him as a person, it's not really important. It's not that you have ill will or this or that. It's just not important. You're not devoted to the person. You'll come in, you'll do all the appropriate things. You come in, say hello, might bring a gift if it's allowed, you know, speak some night, how's the family, whatever it is, whatever's the local custom. And in this way, then they're pleased and then they sign your paper and stamp it and then you're good. And then after that, you may have nothing to do with them again. Right? So it's only as long as you have something, then you're going to God and you're getting. Right? Does that make sense? Now when you get into the fourth level, then the idea is that it goes from being a person, because they take it that anything personal is material because they only know the modes of nature. Therefore, so the spiritual must be impersonal. So then because of the pessimistic, you see the first three, they're basically optimists, like the Dharmartakama Wallace, because they think, you know, we're going to be happy, you know, life's going to be good, you know. But then we get into the impersonal, the fourth level, the moksha, that's because it's not good. So they become pessimists. And because they're pessimists, then they give up. That service, Does that make sense? They give up that idea. And so they then take it that, you know, it, personal gives problems, so therefore impersonal, that must be the absolute. So you see, again, they go back again, kind of like an imaginary God, right? Like the Pranamore. But at the same time is now it's just about themselves again. But about themselves as the Atma, right? The first one is about themselves as the body. Second one is, no, you have to consider everybody else's body. The third one then, you know, we know we're not the body, but we're really into the body. And we know there's God and he'll fulfill our desires if we do everything very nicely, right? So it's a platform of religion. Then there's this fourth level, then it's about we're the soul, not the body, right? So being the soul, not the body, then they focus on that spiritual aspect, that spiritual pursuit. But that spiritual pursuit is impersonal. And now because of this, they're not working for anyone else's benefit again. And so then they're not moral, right? So they're only following those rules and regulations that are, you know, they accept the Shastra. But they're not following the moral principles because someone else gets benefit. They're only following the rules because they get benefit. Just like that on Anamoy. That's why you see is from that platform, you go back down to Anamoy. So in other words, it's all about themselves as the soul. And that we're not the body. There is no forms. There's no nothing like this. And when they want to do activity again and taste, some kind of interaction and all that, which is natural for the jivas, then they've already rejected. So where are they going to go? They tend to be self-centered, though now it's centered on the soul. So they'll go back to that self-centered on the gross platform. Does that make sense? So it's a natural cycle. So that's why the devotees, they skip over that point, right? In other words, they're starting at that platform of dharma, that they're accepting Krishna, they're accepting his laws, but it's about surrendering to him and following his laws to please him. So therefore, its goal is not the heavenly planets, just staying within Manamaya. Its goal is Anandamaya. And you see that they are understanding that they're working on the platform, the soul, not the body. So because of that, then, they're performing their sadhana bhakti and all that without attachment. So they're getting the benefits of that. So they're getting all the proper benefits of the religion. They're getting all the proper benefits of spirituality. But the goal of both those aspects is devotion. Right? And if you have religion, Artha and Kama come anyway. You know, it's just like when you buy some toothpaste, it comes in a tube and the tube's in a box, right? When you go to the shop, you know, then you say, can we help you? Yeah, I'm looking for some toothpaste like that. Okay, yeah, how much you want? Oh, I want 100 grams and all that. Can I get it in a tube? You know, oh, sorry, today we only have it loose and all that. They come along with it. It's automatic. So when you perform religion, artha and kama come anyway. So that's why the point is, if you perform your duty as a human being, all your benefits will come anyway. It's not because I'm doing this work, I'm getting the benefit, right? You're getting paid because you did the work, right? So you have work and you're getting paid because of your proper pious dealings. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the point is when you work and you get paid, then did your working produce money? As you work, then money is being printed? No, money's there. You work, you get, right? So the whole thing is that you're performing your duties, all these things naturally come, right? They're already there. right? The benefit's already there. And according to your work, you perform your work properly, according to the attitude, the modes, then you're going to get that particular result. You know what I'm saying? It's just like taste, depending on what you do. Let us say we take a leaf cup, okay? And in the leaf cup, we put some, how you say, spiced fried mashed potato, okay? And then, what's that going to give? It already has flavor, depending on what you did, what work you did, right? You boiled it, so that gives one aspect. Then you fried it, it gives another aspect. You put certain spices, according to those spices, it gives a flavor. So it makes sense. Now you put some yogurt on top, some tamarind sauce on top, some other spices, some sage, some dhanyapata, right? That, a little wooden spoon, you know, it gives a particular taste. So if the taste is there according to what you've done, it's not that I'm producing taste. No, you do work, the result will be that taste. It's not that I put some tamarinds on top, therefore I've created sweet, I've created sour, I've created punchin. But that's the thing, is they think I'm doing it when they're not doing it. They're just following the rules that give that effect. So you perform your duties in the proper attitude. So the guna and karma is there. Then the modes provide those results, right? Does that make sense? That's actually what's going on, right? So now, because it's for ourselves, then the difficulty is we're not going to be satisfied because who is ourself, right? That's the point, is that yourself is the soul. And who is that soul? They're servant of God. That's their nature. They're servant and of service, the servant of God, right? So therefore, the highest morality is service to God, right? Lowest morality, just service to your group or service to, you know, the world or nation or the universe, like that, you know. Does that make sense? A little bit higher is that God's there watching that we do these things, so we're aware. Then we're following, we're trying to please God. We're following God's laws, right? You know, and then the natural thing is okay, when we add in that I'm the soul, who are we? We're servant of God. Right? In other words, there's an idea that those on the platform of Mana Moy know they're the soul, not the body. But they don't actually know what the soul is. Like, you know, like general people, you ask, what's the soul? They don't know. You know, because Atma has the definition, the body, the mind, the intelligence, and the consciousness. And they're going to mention any of these depending upon what they are. Right? So then the natural point is that if we're just to continue that point from going from no morality into kind of a social morality, into a quasi-God conscious morality, into a proper, into an actual God conscious reality, into the correct God conscious reality. That I'm the soul, I'm servant of God. So therefore now my morality is pleasing God. Right? So that's why this impersonal thing, even though it's going higher because you're adding in the element of the soul, it's losing all the benefits of the other of the religion and all these other things. Right? And so therefore, that's why then they start off down at the bottom again as some nonsense atheists. You know, totally absorbed in sense gratification. So that's the difficulty. So the natural thing is when you recognize that there's God and being grateful for that, you serve God, right? That's the jnani. Right? Then it's going to be that it's not that you serve because he fulfills all desires. No, it's because he being the supreme person, we being his part and parcel, then our natural position is to serve him. So that brings you to that platform of big Jnanamoya, but now as a sadhaka rather than an impersonalist. Right? And then you go forward into Anandamaya, where these impersonalists technically don't. They touch on the aspect of Anandamaya, you know, in that they're absorbed in Brahman, but because it's incomplete. It's not a complete understanding. You know, I mean, their realization is incomplete. You know, our realization may be incomplete, but its potential is to be fully complete. Their end game is where is the platform we want to work from.
For impersonalists, the ananda which they are talking about is of the inherent aspect of the soul, that just like jiva shakti has also bliss, and by nature it is bliss and knowledge. So they are talking about that. They are never talking about ladini shaktis.
Yes. So they're not actually talking. So they're just saying that, okay, within the soul, because then the soul, by the influence of these three shaktis, there's a happiness and distress in the material world. So you get rid of that, then there's an inherent happiness of knowing Brahman and being conscious. But it's just a neutral state. It's not a positive state. And it's neutral. It's based on negativity. It's based on getting rid of anything. So it's not actually a positive happiness. It's a you know, it's just like, let us say your shoulder hurts. And it's annoying. So when the pain goes away, you're happy. But it's not that it's actual a happiness. You're just happy to have gotten rid of the negative. So it's a neutral state. It's not actual. So in that way, like you're saying, it can't actually be ananda. You know, it's just the soul's inherent aspect of ananda in the neutral state, as to Tathagata. But actual ananda is only when if you're in a relationship with the Lord. So, you're good. Yeah.
Maharaj?
Yes.
Maharaj, one of the difficulties to consistently work on Anandamaya platform is all the platforms below, the four platforms are very easily experiential. And the Anandamaya platform, although it contains full bliss and highest bliss, initially at sadhaka level, it becomes difficult to experience that relationship with God. But soul and sense gratification, pranamaya and dharma are easily experienced by our state. So how do we overcome this difficulty?
Basically, is to understand is that you're already experiencing that. It's just on a very small platform. Let's say you have an ocean and you have a drop of water. From that ocean, it's still a drop of water from the ocean, right? So, but what we're dealing with in the material world, we're dealing with, you know, a very small portion of that drop. That's a shadow. In other words, you take that drop of ocean, of the, you know, a drop of the water, a drop of nectar from the ocean of devotion, the unlimited shoreless ocean, right? Okay. And we reduce that down to a very minuscule amount. And then we have the shadow of that. That's what's available in the material world. So it's experiential, but what you're experiencing is not satisfying to the soul. So we have to remember, we can't talk about it like it's some, it's like some substance. If it was substance, why are we here? Why are we questioned? You know what I'm saying? You know, otherwise, you know, life's goal would be, you know, get Shah Rukh Khan's, you know, autograph or something, you know? You know, so then allowed to be perfect, you know? Amitabh Bachchan, when he comes out on his veranda in the morning, we come out and see him and, you know, life's good. No, whatever's the latest haircut and the latest movie, we went down and we got it. And at least when we're in the shop and the guy combs our hair and that, we look good. As soon as we step out of the shop, we look like an idiot. But hey, everybody else looks like an idiot because they got the same haircut. So it's all good. You know what I'm saying? You know, and then you want to make life even better than you and your idiot friends, then go down and have a pizza at Domino's. Right? And talk, you know, half English, half Hindi. No? Right? Okay. So now we've done all this, but it's a shadow. And so when we take up devotional service, we're actually dealing with real, real happiness. But it's not as much as what we're talking about. We're just practice of absorbing ourselves in the shadow. Because if you look at it, okay, if you say it's this, there's the horizon, okay? The sun's just coming up, okay? Your shadow's there. How big is the shadow?
Not so big.
You sure?
Not so big, Maharaj.
If the sun has come up and you're standing there, how big is the shadow behind you?
More, right of the sun, more visible.
Right? It's huge.
Yes.
You know, it's like, you know, you could probably take on Godzilla, you're so big. Right?
Yes.
But now, as the sun comes up, then you see when it's in the zenith, there is no shadow.
Correct.
So, because we're not so absorbed in Krishna, then the shadow is so big, like you're saying, but the shadow is so big and everything like that. And, you know, but the sun, I'm just getting a little bit of light. You understand? Yes. So that's what's happening here. So we're not actually understanding that what we're tasting in Krishna consciousness, that is, you know, a fraction of a portion of a drop from that ocean of nectar. And then as you continue, it gets more and more. The other one has an intensity, but intensity doesn't mean it's good. No?
Yes.
You know? So, yeah. Like, let's say, riding on the train in Bombay during rush hour. It has a certain very intense experience. But it doesn't mean it's good. You know?
Yes.
So this whole idea is that, oh, it's an experience. And why I'm not experiencing Krishna consciousness? You are. But it's just we value the shadow so much. So therefore, then, you know, it's there. And as we start to be less and less impressed, what was that term? Fascinated, yes. Fascinated by the material energy, then we find that it has less and less taste. It's a bad taste. You know? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's the idea is that you are tasting. That's why you're here.
Yeah. True, man.
Like that. Is because there is taste, but it's not as much as that. That may not have that intensity, but then what's the point? The intensity that's there on the material platform, how much intensity do you experience? Is it just, it's just rolls over you in waves and you do nothing, or you've committed yourself to it and you make an endeavor? Right? You make an endeavor to call all your friends and this and that, and what time you're going to meet and where you're going to meet and how everyone's going to get there and who can get there and who has to be picked up and who will do this and that and, you know, all those things like that. Who gets there first? Who sees that we get that spot in the corner that we like? You know, who orders all the stuff? So when everybody else shows up, then we have something to eat. We don't have to wait around. That doesn't take any commitment. Right? So therefore, we're committed to the material energy. Therefore, we're getting an intensity. Right? You know, just like we said, that being on that train in rush hour, why are you on that train in rush hour? Because you're committed to, you know, your particular taking responsibilities of, you know, of work or education, you know, family, society, all these things. And so therefore, we're willing to work, walk on that train. If I just said, hey, why don't we go for a train ride? Okay, yeah, great. You know, what train do you want to catch? Oh, I was thinking to catch the, you know, the rush hour train, at this particular station, whatever it's Bandra, whatever it's, worst of all, right? So then, that should be fun. I love getting in there, the elbows, the squishing, feel packed in, it's all, can feel the community, the camaraderie, No, I'll just say, forget it. Walk. So it's because of attachment they're taking these things. So they're getting the pains and the pleasures together. So you're committed. That's why then it appears that you're getting some benefit. But as you're committing Krishna consciousness, that same commitment, then you see that Krishna reciprocates with that intensity. Does that make sense?
Yes, Maharaj.
Yeah, so you don't have to worry that, we're working so hard, we're getting nothing. It's a matter of, no, you're getting. It's just a matter of be aware of what you're getting. Be aware. Yes.
Also, there is this aspect that many times we discuss, we think that experience means the volume or the quantity, what we measure. But when we see experience at a sensual level, the taste experience, in that sense, we can say a one-year-old child get the maximum experience. That's why he can go and pick up a rock and chew it, and then he has a taste in it. So the sensual level experience is not the actual experience. Then as the consciousness raised, then the person values more relationships, serving other, and then as it grows even more. That's why then we hear that 100 times the king actually experienced more pleasure than ordinary citizen, because he's serving everybody and then he's experiencing more. Then it goes to Gandharva Ananda and then more like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the experience is not about how much quantity, but what is the quality, and within that then the quantity matters. Otherwise then our measurement is wrong.
Yes, yes, that's a very good point. Very good point. So the quality is there, and then that quality comes in quantity. Because sometimes there's also on this material platform, looking at it from a material measurement, is it quality or quantity? So those who say quality, there's no quantity at all. Those who say quantity, there's no quality. But we see Srila Prabhupada, it's quality and quantity. That we do things first class and we do things in a very grand way. So that's the point. You have that drop, and then that drop will expand like the ocean. So as we surrender to Krishna, then it will be there. But that's a very nice point. As your consciousness raises, then that intensity doesn't seem to mean anything. The material intensity. Just like you said, as a kid, something was so intense. Like I remember, I've had myself experience, I've heard others talk about it, that there was something you did as a kid, or something you ate as a kid, or some place you went as a kid, and it was so fabulous. It was like a very major part of your consciousness of that this was great. And then later, whatever it is, you go back to that place when you have an opportunity, 10, 20, 30 years later, you think, oh, you got to come, this is so fabulous. Then you go there and it's not so fabulous, and it's not so great, and it's not so special.
Maharaj, also eating chalks and pencils and...
Yeah. Play-Doh. Did you guys have Play-Doh to chew on? It's actually, Play-Doh's been made that you can eat it and it won't kill you. Because they know kids, especially in kindergarten, first grade, they eat everything. That's...
Like on the slate, what kind of chalks we use, it's different, Maharaj, than the chalks right now. So those, even if you eat, not much problem. Those were more harder and very, very thin.
Yeah, well, they were probably also actual, it's actually just straight that stone. That fine. So this now is probably all chemicals to hold it together. Okay.
Also, we see that the pleasure, what we get, the material pleasure, when we lose it, and when we remember that we lost it, we become more miserable. But the pleasure which we get from Krishna consciousness, even when we don't have, by remembering that, we become happy. Even in Viparamba, we become, just by remembering, like we come to Mayapur, and when we are not in Mayapur, just thinking about Mayapur, we feel that experience.
Yeah, another excellent point. Yeah, yeah. So that also then, that can be a practical point of the, you know, just a practical point of the question that would come up when we're studying about the Krishna and the devotees and rasa, then at some point you always get into Viparamba. And then the idea is, well, but that will be so much pain. Why would we want that? But the point is no, it's just like you said, we're missing, you know, being in Mayapur, or, you know, there was a really nice kirtan or some fabulous prasad. Just remembering it would become happy, even though we're separated from it. Yeah, very good point. Nice point. Yes.
Guru Maharaj, we see that, for example, in China, we have two types of impersonal philosophers, Lao Tzu and Confucius. And one of them, he claimed he rejected religion and personal aspect because he wanted to say that we need to get impersonal liberation in Tao and Law and Tao. And the second, he told that we need to get some social benefits, like on pranamoya level. And same also in India, we see some impersonal philosophers like Shankaracharya. His goal was impersonal Brahman. And some philosophers like Ramananda Roy, Ramahan Roy or Vivekananda, they also rejected religion, but for social moral values. So can we say that impersonal philosophers usually reject Gyanamaya level for to this pranamoy or so can we say that pranamoy and the Vidyanamaya level they are for impersonal philosophers?
No, you can also have, I mean, impersonal is that they don't necessarily have that aspect of God, but they're going to, it's a matter of, like Prabhupada said, if the spiritualist, if he gets distracted, then he tends to go into philanthropic work and things like that. So they go into the pranamoy kind of aspect, right? So it's pretty standard that they'll go into the pranamoy aspect. But in that is because then you're dealing with an imagined aspect of God. Because Brahman, they're imagining Brahman. You know, just like they're imagining that, yes, there's God, he's there, he's everywhere. You know, like your common person. He doesn't necessarily understand about God and all this and that. There may be some faith in God. He may be there, may not be there. But, you know, there's some faith and all that. They don't have. So that's generally the kind of thing. It's an imagined kind of aspect. Reimagined doesn't mean necessarily made up. Imagined means it's only within the mind. Like that. It's not based on any authority. And so in that way, you can also say, because it's just difficulties. English lacks certain terminologies. Maybe there's some nice things in Latin, but, you know. So you can say is that those ones, they are technically acting on that pranamaya platform. They'll talk other things, just like, let's say, in this, it should be appreciated that you have the platform you work at and the platform that is your goal, right? Just like, let's say, generally speaking, we always see is that, and your methods, you know, the field and all that. So let's say modern scientists and all that, They work on the platform of anamaya because their knowledge is pratyaksha, what they can perceive, and that's all. And then if someone then when do they go to paroksha, that means the teacher is teaching you as the student. So that's then called the descending knowledge. But it's all based on paroksha, it's all based on sensual knowledge. It's all based on pratyaksha, right? So it's not that it has anything higher. But at the same time is they're using the intellectual process of mental speculation and all that. So then they can also be classified by the process they use. They're on the Vijnanamaya platform. because they use mental speculation as their. Mm-hmm. Understand? But you see, they don't know that the soul, they don't have any morality. They're atheists. You know, or if they do, they do some, you see, it's not uncommon that, you know, especially in the, you know, very recent kind of time, that an academic, especially professors, they should have some kind of social awareness, right? You know, that if they, you know, they need to be appreciative of all these political and social issues. And so then they should work on those platforms, present those, and try to influence the students. So that means then they're professing pranamoy kind of aspects. Though they're very speculative, they'll talk about the supreme and this and that, and it's like this and that. So they have some impersonal, you know, ideas. So you always get a mix. So it's just a matter of which one you're looking at, but you still go by the prominence. So then the prominence, and you'll say they're situated here at Pranamoy. Just like you'll see is that it's mentioned, Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that when you're dealing with this aspect of that kind of joint between Pranamoy and Manamoy, where they accept the God, but it's imagined only because it benefits the social aspects. So then he will talk about that you'll have all these different people that are there. And I think it's, I don't know how you say it, Comte? Comte, he's a philosopher, C-O-M-T-E.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you say Comte? I don't know how you say
it. No. I said about Chinese philosopher Confucius.
I know you're talking about that, but I'm saying, we're giving the example. This guy, then he is very openly saying, you just imagine God, because by imagining and by having faith in God, the whole social construct goes way better than if you don't believe in God. So his point is just for morale, social morality, if you believe in God, social morality will go better. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out is he's very direct in what he's saying. And he mentions Jaimini and these others philosophers. They're more clever. They don't exactly reveal. So Patanjali talks about, you know, God as a person. Jaimini talks about God as a person, but in actuality, they don't really believe in that, you know, God's not important. He's just a branch of their process. You know what I'm saying? So they're not even fully proper, theistic moralists. You know, we can use a very broad, anybody who accepts, okay, there's some God supreme, we'll call them theistic moralists for working with. But when you get into it technically, then it would be, you know, someone more like, what's his name? Our Brahma's son with the goat head, Daksha, Prajapati Daksha. Like here's someone we have in the sixth canto is Hamsa Guya prayers. So he knows he's God and this and that, but he's a tried and true a Karmakandi. You know, now whether he actually on that is just setting that as an example of stuff, or that's just his position and he's God conscious, but he's interested in the material benefits gained from that. You know, hence he's the son of Brahma. He's not even, you know, on the level of Indra and those guys. He's above that. You know what I'm saying? So now when we're talking, does that make sense? So here is that they get into the impersonal and all that, but at the same time is you see is where is the Tao, it's talking about all these things, but the Tao is specifically focused just in your practical life. You can do it anywhere. Right, you know, which is an appropriate aspect. You know, when we talk about how they'll generally be talking about the chi, right? How the chi works, and so you're performing a duty properly because you're doing the action that allows the chi to flow. Right, so whether it's a physical action, it's a mental action, it's a social action, you know, whatever it is, the chi can work because your deep, because the chi is the life of whatever it is you're doing. You know, so a lot of times then they apply that into the martial arts and all that, right? If you're coming in the, in the Shaolin side, right? And so then behind that, which they don't talk about much, is the li. Right? You have the chi, but then that's based on the li. The li is actually that inherent back potency. And then you can see that through the moving of the life airs and other things and the energies. And that, so the li is the basis of the chi. So the li will be that impersonal aspect. But it's the all-pervading and everything like that. So the li is all-pervading. Chi, then you can get to act if you understand the rules applying from the li on the situation, then the chi will flow. Right? So they can apply it anywhere. So you see, as generally, as you're saying, he's talking about that impersonal and coming to that, but he's applying it specifically into the social kind of environment more. But you do see that there are those who use it for all kinds of things, you know? So, you know, they do use it for fighting, and they do use it for war. They do use it for politics. They do use it for their daily things. They do use it for cutting their subjis. You know, so even though it's about that, the impersonal, like you said, their ultimate goal is the impersonal. They're working with the impersonal techniques, and they're applying it kind of in there. They do get into the aspects of karma that you see traditionally would be not used in the Vedic impersonal paths, right? So they're working there. Now, if you think, when you said that, the other one, that's Lao Tzu, the second path was Lao Tzu?
Lao Tzu is impersonal, Confucius is a more social.
Yes, the Lao Tzu is, but you see, as Lao Tzu is using it in war, right? The book, a book of, what was that called? He has a book on war.
On war, I don't know about this book.
Yeah, no, it's not the Bon Krieg. That's in Europe. That's Sun Tzu. Yeah, Sun Tzu, Lao Tzu. Yeah, so he'll be like this. But at the same time, as we're saying, is that you have these aspects. So he'll put more on the li, and you know, applying qi for li, and then Confucius will apply more on the qi for social things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they're both working on the same principles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like the Manomoy platform, they're working on the principles of the Vedic principles, and that there's a supreme absolute.
Mm-hmm.
But the emphasis is on the religious aspects and the benefits of that. Well, then the Vijnanamoy, they're working on the same platform, but they're shifting and putting the emphasis on the soul.
Mm-hmm.
And by the emphasis being on the soul, then they're missing out on practical application. So you see here is that Lao Tzu, then he'll be more renounced and all that, and Confucius will be more socially involved. So you can say one is, you know, but does that make sense? But it just depends upon if it comes down to it's just about the social things and all that, just about niti and stuff like that, then it comes down to more of the prana and the platform. Mm-hmm. But if it's understood, you know, or even just the personal platform, I'm only doing this because I get the benefit. But they're accepting that there is a higher force and that, and you're following the laws of that higher force. Both of them will accept that. No? That there's mm-hmm. some higher absolute, force. And therefore you have to bring, and therefore there's laws of nature, and therefore everything that you work with has to be according to those laws if you want to be successful. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, it has that aspect that it's accepting those higher things. But what we see is that they're not following the Vedas, and so it'll put it outside that, but it'll be kind of like mimicking that. So they'll be working at the prana, that manamoy focused on pranamoy, and the other will be vijnanamoy, but you know, what exactly, what's the lifestyle of someone following Lao-tzu? What do they do? Are they monks? Can they be regular people? What?
Followers of Lao-tzu, they monks, and followers of Confucius, they just usual social people.
Yeah, like that. Okay, so if they're monks, and so then they'll be like that. So they'll be more in that kind of vijnanamoy. And the other ones will be, because they're following the rules, they'll be more like the manamoy.
Mm-hmm. Right?
But they're applying it into artha and kama.
Mm-hmm.
Like most everybody will do anyway. It's just a matter of when you're getting that artha and kama. Is it now in this life? Is it in the future life? But they're situated at once. So that's the thing, is that where you're situated, but where your goal is. So they're using the same science, just one's emphasizing the renounced part, the one's emphasizing the practical part. You know, one is nivriti, one's pravriti. But then that pravriti means it's dharma, artha, kama. The other one's nivriti, it's liberation. But they're using a central point. So in the Vedic, it's also the same. You're using the Bhagavad Gita, and some are using it for dharma, artha, kama, and some are using it for moksha.
Mm-hmm.
While the actual thing, as it is, they're using it for bhakti. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So to say that they're on that platform, pakka, that's another thing. But that's the point, is that's where they're working from. You know? Because these are general aspects. In other words, he mentions there's going to be four levels of consciousness within the material world.
Mm-hmm.
That which is immoral and sensual, right? Atheistic and immoral. Second mm-hmm. level is atheistic and moral.
Mm-hmm.
Third level is theistic and moral. And the fourth level is impersonal. Does that make sense? So you're going to get that. Now, they may be a little bit in between here or here, just like we're saying, so you have the pranamoy. And then the thing is with that pranamoy, they're adding into the concept of that there is God. It's imagined. So it's not fully on the manamoy platform, but it's kind of in between. Right? Mm-hmm. Just like down here, there's going to be those who, they only follow enough where it's just their group that they're worried about. It's not the greater society. So you're always going to have these kind of aspects.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the devotee, then they get the benefit of all these platforms, and they attain the highest goal, because all these platforms that there is, you're situated spirit transcendentally, unaffected by the modes. You perform action in relationships. Results are gained that can be experienced and that give pleasure. So that means the devotee gets all these things. So you're trying to get Krishna's pleasure, so therefore you get your pleasure. How does that come? From a particular activity, right? Mm-hmm. Getting a particular result. How is that done? By following the proper guidelines. And where is that being performed from? From that transcendental position. So in other words, it reflects the other way. It goes like this,
mm-hmm.
right? So that point of being situated on the spiritual platform is the bottom of the spiritual realm, right? Then they do those things according to their nature to get results to please Krishna,
mm-hmm.
right? And on the material world, then they're trying to get to the spiritual position, or they're not. They're just when they get to material benefits and all that in the long term, or they want more immediate things and they're not willing to acknowledge God, or they're just like animals and they're just trying to get their own pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's just the reverse. So that's the point, is that here means the devotee has, it all goes together, because here in the material world, this material energy doesn't have the achintya potency. Therefore, these four are four distinct aspects. They may kind of a little bit of this and that, and a little bit of this, but they have their basic place where they're going to be. right? They may use some technique from here, from there, but basically you're going to say it's, right? Yeah.
Guru Maharaj, may I ask one more question?
Oh, here, well, just let's finish that one. So then, but in the spiritual world, because of the Achintya Shakti, therefore all seeming contradictions are perfectly harmonized. So all these four go together perfectly, just as service to Krishna, right? So therefore, all those four aspects, they work very nicely.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now your question.
Guru Maharaj, I was a few days ago in one interface dialogue, and there was one priest from Confucius temple, and he described history of the tradition. He said about first creation, first man, he Pangu, and the story given by him was very similar to our story of Manu and about laws given by Manu. But everything is similar, but the philosophy is not theistic. Is it happen because they don't have parampara?
Means they, there's a parampara coming down from Buddha, but the point is that, you know, whether it's maintained or not, but that's another thing. But you have that the Buddhist philosophy is established on not following the Veda, right?
Yes.
Yes. So now Buddha, he is going to be preaching to who?
Guru Maharaj, he said the story is before Buddha, from the first Chinese king.
That's fine. But Buddha, who did he preach to? Means, where is Buddha? In which region of the world?
In China. No.
No. Means, where was Buddha born?
In India.
Okay. So that means he preached there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the people on the Indian subcontinent, what religious processes were they following?
Wait.
According to what literature?
Vedic
literature. So therefore then, they're going to have all these histories and everything like that. They're going to know all that. So all that Buddha is going to do is now explain everything using all those examples and this and that and histories and all that, but now according to the impersonal, without the conclusion that the Vedas are using. So in other words, you can use the histories, but you don't want to use the shlokas, you know, that are going to show something else other than the voidism. So in other words, Buddha's all leading disciples, we're all Brahmins,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah, and so like that. So, and it wasn't getting so far until they got to, you know, a show. So once they got mm-hmm. a Kshatriya into it, then Kshatriya is whatever they do, everybody's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so then it spread, you know, so far. But the point is it's there. So it's natural that their discussions on history and this and that and all that are going to be the same. So basically you can say any culture pre-Christianity is going to be similar to the Vedic version anywhere on the planet. Only when Christianity came, then they kick all that out because that's just how they work. They weren't actually that mature that they could acknowledge the whole aspect of God and his creation and everything. Right? You know, it's like how many chapters on creation are there in the Vedic literature? Huge amount.
Mm-hmm.
In the Bible, we have literally 1 1/3 pages.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So that's all there is. So then they don't know a whole lot like this. And so the whole point is because in your standard religious process, your philosophy means your dharma, artha, kama, and moksha are all integrated together. So therefore, the lifestyle reflects the religion, your economic system reflects the religion, your sense gratification reflects the religion, your philosophies reflect the religion, right? Your economics reflect the religion, everything reflects the religion. So then, for Christianity to establish themselves, then how do they do it? They do it by destroying the culture that's there. That's why in Christianity, there is no Christian food or dress or activity. When does a Christian go to bed and get up? What do they eat? How much do they eat? How many times a day do they eat? What do they eat with what? Do they eat with their hands or not? You know, how do they go to the toilet? How do they sleep? Do they sleep on a bed or not? Are there sheets or not? You know, which direction do they sleep? Is there anything? Nothing. Zero. I mean, absolutely nothing. There is no culture. Because to establish it, because other religions have a full culture, they have to establish themselves because they don't actually know a lot of philosophy. They have to destroy the culture. Right? The original Christians didn't have this problem because they were Jewish. So they just followed the Jewish law. And so therefore you just did like that. But once you have Paulinism, because it's technically a different religion, it's based on faith on Jesus, but it's not what Jesus gave. It may be some snippets from his philosophy and his mood and like this, but as far as religion goes, it's a different religion. They'll say, oh no, that was the same. No, it's a different religion, which means anything that doesn't go against your faith in Jesus, you know, like that, then that is what you can do. And so then, because that was established in Europe, and so therefore the European standard and lifestyle, that's the Christian lifestyle. That's why then they try to establish the whole world, they follow that lifestyle. But it's just the values are just what you say is a good Christian gentleman. Well, why do you say, you know, that they make it sound like the gentleman comes from Christianity, but it doesn't. No, he's a local gentleman who's a Christian. Does that make sense? So therefore, then these Buddhists, then they're when you're established here, it's just, you just, the local, how you say, religious principles, that's what they do. So you see the Buddhists, much of their lifestyle and everything will be similar to ours. And so then all that's, you know, whatever's been, then it's documented. And then you get the Pali scriptures and you get the Buddhist literature. So therefore, you're going to see, they're going to talk about creation as being similar to what we say. They have their, you know, they know about Ramayana, they know about Hanuman, Garuda, how much they know, which parts of the stories they know, all these different things will be, you know, like that, you know, the Vaivasvata Manu was it Vaivasvata with the boat? With Matsya? Or was that Chakshusha?
End of Chakshusha only, Maharaj.
Yeah, so there, then you're going to have that aspect, you know, is there. And so you even see some of these things within the Bible. You know, so these things are going to be all there. But the point is that when they come in, you don't see it in the modern society because Christianity made it their business to destroy it. Then you can say, now you just have this. And so now what lifestyle you live? You live the lifestyle that those Europeans live. Right? So they happen to be in Europe, but somehow now they're following the European lifestyle is considered Christian. But no, it's not. It's just European. Proper Christian lifestyle is Jewish. Judea, right? Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole thing, is that it's the same principle. So they're just applying these things. So therefore, there's going to be great similarity. Christianity is the only thing that doesn't have any idea of this. That's why they can't explain creation and this and that. And they have all kinds of weird things that 5,000 years ago, Adam and Eve popped up. And 5,000 years ago, Adam and Eve did pop up. But that's not when humans started. That's when the Malechas start in Kali Yuga. And so then a prince and princess of that local region, having taken on the sin that was there in that one tree from some previous king, God only knows when, then they were kicked out of that area, then they came down to here. That's why you also get the idea that maybe when they're talking about come walking with God as a demiurge, it's not actually the real God. You know, so you get all kinds of weirdo stuff. So they don't understand the essential points. So we have to be able to see in the proper balance here is that all these things are there, and we see it from the Vedic perspective. And so what part then they're talking that's nice, then that's great. So in other words, laws do come down from the Supreme. That's what we should be following. Like that. And then local customs that don't go against that, then those are fine. Does that make sense?
Yes, Guru Maharaj. Thank you very much. Guru Maharaj?
The time's up. So we'll stop. Okay. Very good. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shri Prabhupada.